Welcome to the ICEF podcast, where we discuss all things cybersecurity. I'm your host, Steve Durbin.
ISF CEO Steve Durbin is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve looks toward the horizon at the threats and challenges that enterprises and business leaders will face in 2026 and beyond, and he gives advice on how everyone, from the board to the practitioner, can meet these challenges.
Hello, and welcome to the ISF's annual lookout into 2026 to see this year what it is that we're going to have to be contending with, an emerging threat and challenge over the next 12 months. I'm Steve Durbin. Over the next hour, what I'm going to be doing is highlighting for you my particular perspective on some of those emerging threats and challenges. I'm also going to be giving you some advice on how you can deal with them right the way across the organization, from the boardroom right the way down to the practitioner. So what are we going to specifically be looking at? Well, I've entitled this one, Cyber Resilience Comes of Age. And this is really important, I think, for us as we look forward into 2026. Resilience, we've talked about a lot in the past. The challenge we're going to be facing over the next 12 months is that cyber attacks, cyber threats, are going to become much more complex, going to be much more persistent, going to be much more intelligent, and I think they're going to be quite a bit more automated than we've seen in the past. So our chances of actually being able to repel them, deal with them, are probably a little bit reduced. So the important piece is to focus very hard on how our organizations can be resilient. And what do I mean by that? Resilience really needs an organizational-wide, holistic approach that takes technology, it takes governance, it takes operational readiness, and really importantly, it takes people into account. So cultural maturity of the enterprise, the way you work with people, the way you inform them, the way you explain to them the role they have to play in the organization and in becoming resilient and fighting off some of these attacks is going to be even more important, I would say. I've pulled out four key drivers of cyber risk for 2026. Of course, AI is in there. Couldn't really avoid that one, but I'm going to take a slightly different approach to that, as you'll see in a moment. I want to talk about third parties. I've talked about them before. Those of you that watch this on an annual basis will know that third parties have been a bit of a theme of mine for a number of years now. But I think it's really important to cover it, so it's in there again. I want to talk about quantum. A little bit contentious for some people. Some say we're too early. Some say we're too late. We'll have a bit of a chat about that. We'll figure out exactly what's right for each of you. And then finally, I want to talk about geopolitics. We live in an increasingly unstable world. I don't see it improving in the short term. So the way in which we can adapt from a security perspective, but also from an organizational resilience standpoint to geopolitical uncertainty and instability, I think is going to be very important in 2026. So let's take a look at the first of those threats or challenges. AI. As most of you will now recognize, AI is being used pretty widely, both in terms of defensive plays and offensive plays. It's now helping attackers to automate fairly complex steps of a cyber attack. What does that mean? It means that they can go faster. It means that they can attack more cheaply, and they can do it at far greater scale. So we've got that old combination of volume and velocity, the two things that we hate from a security standpoint. So what is it that I think you need to be watching out for? I think we're going to see much more AI-generated spear phishing. There's no doubt about that. Voice, audio, deepfakes. Not new, but I think the degree of sophistication is what we need to be worried about. I'm thinking, when I say it's not new, back to 2024, I think. Big engineering company based in the UK lost £20 million simply by responding to an AI-generated deepfake. So it's been around for a while, but I think we're going to see more of it. And the other thing I think to watch out for is the synthetic identity attacks. So where we've got a certain amount of information, we add AI into the mix, and we come up with an identity that it's exceptionally hard for us to really spot the difference between reality and AI. So those are the things I'd say there we need to watch out for. I'm also a little bit concerned about malware and ransomware that can adapt in real time. So I think a lot of work going on in terms of how AI can be used from the bad guy's standpoint in those regards, particularly if you've got legacy security tools in place. Now, I can almost hear some of you sighing at the fact that, you know, you spent millions, literally millions, on some of your security tools that are out there. And yes, some of them may be coming to the end of life. You do, unfortunately, have to be focused on those. The legacy ones are the ones that are going to give attackers an opportunity to break through. So just do a quick review. Have you got the right, most up-to-date security tools in place? Should you be changing them? What do you think of the vendors? All of that good stuff. Proper due diligence is really what I'm saying. What's the priority? What's the strategic priority in all of this? I think you've got to build in capability in AI-based detection. The tools are out there. The capability is there. You've got to look for anomalies. And you really need to be focused on your incident management, because some of these things will inevitably get through. So AI, going to be a bit of a headache for us. But at the same time, on the positive side, I do see a lot of development really going into some of the more defensive tools. And so not all bad news, but just be a little bit eyes open when it comes to AI. Let's move on. Supply chain. Now, I said at the beginning, I talk about this a lot. I've always been concerned about supply chains, third parties. And global organizations, most organizations actually, really do depend on fairly complex third-party vendors. A lot of you will be using cloud. A lot of you will be using software as a service. You'll have interconnected supply chains. And if one part of that chain is breached, it may not even be in your own organization, the problem can quickly spread outside and infect the whole ecosystem. So what have we got to watch out there? I do see attackers embedding backdoors in vendor and software supply chains. I think we're going to see as well more of a move to exploiting shadow IT or unmanaged APIs. A lot of you are using APIs for good reason. You just need to make sure that you're managing them. And I think that organizations on the whole must improve their vendor cyber risk management. You have to work more closely with your vendors. There's a requirement for a much higher degree of supplier-based transparency, and you have to be monitoring constantly and continuously. Now, all of that comes with an overhead, but the downside, if you don't do it, can be quite catastrophic. And again, I'm thinking of some of the more recent attacks that we've seen just in 2025, where businesses have been brought literally to a standstill, not because their own organization has had the attack, but because perhaps the outsourcer that they're using has been attacked. The effect on reputation, on business, is never with the third party. It's always with you. And so you have to really pay attention to what you will do come the day when one of your third parties or a component of your supply chain is infected. Some of you will be familiar with, again, a very large manufacturer based in the UK. The cost of what I'm talking about here has risen to about £1.9 billion. That's not insignificant. Put the money aside, that's had a knock-on impact, not just on the workforce, but also on a number of different smaller manufacturers that provide product. Because once the manufacturing plant shuts down, you no longer need to have all of those components being provided. So it isn't just money. It is real impact on people's lives and indeed on the whole business ecosystem. What's the priority in that? Well, I think boards have got a key role to play here. I think they should be demanding much more forcefully metrics on third-party risk exposure and supply chain resilience. I'm a big fan of that. I would like to see it almost being a statutory requirement for boards to really look at and understand the risk that they're facing across that whole digital ecosystem. Let's move on. The third one, quantum. I said this was a little bit contentious. I probably need to explain what's going on here. Now, some of you will have probably switched off and gone, quantum, it's not here. It won't be here for a while. I've got loads more problems that I need to be dealing with in the here and now. And to be honest, you might be right. There will be others who are listening to this. Perhaps you're working in critical infrastructure. Perhaps you have a lot of legacy systems, legacy data that you have to be storing, who are saying, do you know what? Probably should have started looking at this a little bit sooner. So let's put some facts in here. When are we likely to see quantum? Probably not for about another 10 years. So here we are at the end of 2025. Probably by the end of 2035, we'll start to see some of this coming about. Some will disagree with me, but let's use 10 years as the benchmark for the time being. And now let's look at the time it takes, on average, for organisations to reassess their encryption. Well, if you happen to be a government organisation, healthcare provider, for instance, in a very large scale, it's probably going to be taking you about 10 years, maybe a little bit more, to just work through all of the data that you've got that's encrypted and to figure out how you're going to migrate it across to a quantum-proof environment. So, simple sums. If you haven't started, here we are in 2025. Quantum comes down the road in 2035. You've got 10 years. You're up against it. You probably need to be making a start in January. If you're a large organization, but not in that critical infrastructure space, you've probably got a little bit more time. Probably take you, I don't know, up to about 6 years, 7 years or so to just figure out all of these different systems. Now, the numbers I'm giving you, of course, are hugely dependent on the amount of data that you're storing and the amount of data that you have to store and the amount of data that has been encrypted. But they're not bad as a rule of thumb to get your head around when you need to be starting work in this space. And then if you're a medium-sized organization, happy days, you've probably got about 3 to 5 years to play around with it. But that's not long. And so my point here is, whilst quantum computing may not yet break all of the encryption that's out there that you're using, we know, and you know, that people are already harvesting data. They can't look at it, but it's in anticipation of being able to decrypt. So as quantum computing develops, that traditional encryption that we've depended upon will no longer be secure. And that's going to put you at risk if you're reliant on older systems. Now, who's reliant on older systems? The reality is that quite a lot of us are, particularly if you're in financial services, you're in logistics, you're in healthcare, any of the critical infrastructures. That's where I get the 10-year piece from. And you need to have migration plans in place to post-quantum cryptography starting now if you're in that space. Talking to ISF members who do fit into that area, I know already that some of you are very concerned that perhaps you've started a bit late. Is quantum going to take 10 years to come along? Who knows? But if it were me, I certainly wouldn't be betting on it taking longer. So what's the priority in this? If your organization keeps sensitive data for long periods, then you need to be concerned and you need to be treating this as a strategic risk. From an ISF standpoint, why not use something like our protecting the crown jewels? Why not figure out where encryption is being used across the business? Create a bit of a roadmap for transitioning to quantum-resistant protections. The PCJ, whilst not designed for quantum and encryption, will really help you to look at how you can identify key components of data that are absolutely important to the way in which you run your business. So that's the quantum piece. Last one we've got is geopolitics. Everyone's aware of this. I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon, sadly. You know, nation states, proxy groups, criminal syndicates, they're all increasingly targeting critical infrastructure, energy, transport, finance. We've seen some of the effects and impacts that can have. Again, just this year, we saw a lot of airports come to a grinding halt because of an attack on a software provider that was responsible for check-in and boarding software. So it really does make a difference to the way in which we go about running our businesses. We are so dependent now on digital interaction, cross-border, that we just have to plan for the day when things go wrong. We have to take an approach that says, what is the minimally viable company? What does it look like? How can I run with it? And I think that's where we need to be starting with all of this, because we are going to see more cyber attacks on industrial control systems and also OT, operational technology, and sadly, supply networks. I think we're going to have to watch out for much more disinformation, deepfakes, hybrid campaigns, really that are tied to geopolitical conflicts. We've been seeing that happening over the past few years anyway. So nothing necessarily new in that. But it is going to have much more of an impact and effect on business environments and, of course, operations and, sadly, on business trust. So, again, what can you do? I think this one sits fairly and squarely in the boardroom, if I'm being honest. I think boards need to really take it upon themselves to absolutely recognize that cyber risk is a national risk. It is a business-ending risk. And they need to ensure that they don't just have incident response and resilience in place, but that they also have a tried and tested plan. So this is good old-fashioned BCP, business continuity planning, with a cyber flavor. Most of ISF members that will be listening to this, who are at a much more advanced stage than some of the other organizations that are out there, will be regularly running BCP simulations. They'll be regularly running with us cybersecurity exercises. And that's a good way of testing from the board, again, right the way down to the practitioner level, exactly how you're going to respond. I still talk to people today who keep telling me that it's not going to be a problem because they've got all of their plans and they're all being stored digitally. But what happens when your network goes down, when you don't access it? So there's also a little bit of old school coming in here too. We have to go a bit retro. We've got to have paper. NCSC in the UK advised that not that long ago. I've been talking about it for quite some while. Absolutely no use if your systems have gone down and your BCP and your cyber response plans are being held digitally in the cloud somewhere. You have to have a paper copy. Dead simple. Bang it through the printer. Off you go. Keep it up to date. Lock it up in a filing cabinet, fireproof, all of that good stuff. And boards need to be actively involved. They need to be testing it. And the resilience cover needs to really address everything from the physical component through to digital, reputational, and if you're in this kind of space, some of the national security dimensions as well, if particularly your critical infrastructure. So those are the four, are they threats? They're certainly challenges that we need to be facing up to, I think, in 2026. So what I've done now is given you a number of questions that you can ask. Doesn't matter whether you're at the board level or whether you're a practitioner. These are simple questions that you can ask to really try to get a handle on how well prepared your organization might be in each of these different areas. So if we look at the AI one, for instance, do we have real-time visibility of threats, especially AI-driven attacks across our environment? Good opening question. Normally going to provoke quite a response in that and some detail. The reason we're asking it is that in 2026, attackers will use AI for reconnaissance, impersonation, and rapid exploitation. So ask that question. That'll give you a little bit of comfort as to whether or not you need to be doing more work in the AI space or whether you can tick that box and move on for a little while. Next one's about third parties. So how robust and monitored are our third party and supply chain security systems? Why? Supply chain compromise has really been in vogue for some while now. And I think in 2026, it's also going to stay as one of the most damaging vectors globally. So we need to be prepared for it. How resilient are we to prolonged disruption from state-aligned or geopolitical cyber operations? This one is really into that critical infrastructure space, you know, finance, manufacturing, logistics. They're all going to be prime targets for nation-state campaigns in 2026. You need to make sure that your resilience plans are in place around that. A question around quantum. Are we prepared for a world where quantum capabilities can break today's encryption? The answer could be no, because we don't need to be. That's absolutely fine. But at least ask the question, because we know that quantum-ready adversaries may already be harvesting some of your data on a basis of store now and decrypt later. And then the last one really is fairly and squarely aimed at testing your board level resilience. So do we have board level assurance that cybersecurity, risk and business strategy are aligned and tested? Why is that? Because all too often we've got gaps in governance. We've got assumptions that are being made and those can cause failures more often than some of the technical threats that are out there. So test some of these things out. Just ask some of these questions, whether you're working in security or whether you're working in the business, and see what sort of answer you get. It'll give you a good insight into where you need to be directing some of your attentions in 2026. Now, I've talked about the board. This is one of my particular themes, areas, because I think the boards generally, whilst they have improved in their understanding of cyber, still have quite a way to go and still quite a lot of work needs to be done in this space. 2026, some of the emerging challenges that I've been talking about are going to introduce additional governance questions. There's no doubt about that. The first one for me would be, who actually has the authority to make decisions on cyber risk? Now, risk traditionally has been something that a board has always managed. However, if you're in a very large organization, let's say you've got operations in a number of different countries, are you always going to be referring back? to a board for that kind of thing? I would suggest not. So I think that the board has to change its approach, has to give an overall perspective on what the guidelines are. Then it also has to be handing down authority for making some of these decisions to some of those operating units. Second question, which is really important, is how is our risk tolerance changing? The space we're involved in is moving so very quickly that we need to be making sure that our risk tolerance, our risk systems are keeping a pace with it. What regulations do we need to consider and how will that impact information that we have to share? The whole world of regulation is not going to become consistent anytime soon. So we need to stay on top of that. We need to be looking at it from a business perspective in terms of which jurisdictions are we moving into. And there's a big role here for the Chief Legal Counsel in terms of providing some of that input to inform board directors. And I think there are some changes, I would say, in the way that board governance, sound board governance in particular, needs to adapt and needs to really flex to take into account some of the cyber risks that are out there. The first one, I know a lot of you will already be able to tick, that general understanding that the threats we're talking about go way beyond IT. They do impact business continuity. They do impact global operations. They do impact reputation, trust, supply chains, the whole essence of an organization. So we can no longer afford to look at it as an IT or a pure cyber issue. Second thing I would say is that metrics really do matter. Boards should be asking, and I'm not going to be popular here with some of the CISOs listening in, I know, but boards should be asking for quantified cyber exposure. There needs to be a strategy in place so that you can reduce your attack surface. How are you measuring and monitoring vendor risk? What about resilience? Leads me on to the next point, which is about preparedness. Preparedness is really crucial. You have to have incident response scenarios that are in place. You have to be able to lock down potentially certain vendors and have an alternative way of working without them. You have to understand what your AI capabilities are. And governance pulls some of that around for you. But preparedness is crucial, and you have to practice and rehearse. And then finally, this recognition, and some boards have got there, not as many as I would like, but we are improving, as I said. You know, cybersecurity is strategic. It has to be embedded at the board level, and it isn't just an IT issue. So I talked a lot about resilience. How do we go about embedding some of these things? For me, sustainable resilience, and that's really what we're aiming for, does require very strong governance and a security-conscious culture. Easier said than done. First step, define clear cyber risk ownership. Who is responsible? Where does it sit? The board will have some of that, but business leaders, operational leaders, and executive level should also have some of it, and it should be consistent. My own view, some of you may disagree with me on this, and I know that some of you will say, Steve, we've had lots of conversations about this, but I'm still choosing to take this particular stance. I do believe that we need to integrate cybersecurity into enterprise risk management frameworks. I think that is a logical step. I think if cyber is so integral to your business, that there isn't any other place for it. And I don't actually accept that it's so different that it needs to be kept separately. And I know that that's somewhat contentious for some of you. I think we need to be commissioning independent audits or maturity assessments. If you think about it, nobody bats an eyelid when the auditors come in and do your financials. So why shouldn't you be having some security guru come in and do exactly the same thing? Now, a lot of ISF members who are watching this, of course, will say, yep, we're doing that. We have all the benchmarks that you can provide, Steve. We've got risk assessment methodologies. We're using that as well. But it's the independence that I'm stressing here. Don't assume that you can mark your own homework. And I really do look forward to the day when cyber-based audits are considered to be equally as important, if not more important, than financial audits. People. We need to implement a resilience culture program. People are not the weakest link. They're actually your strongest, but you need to be constantly reinforcing secure behavior. That means we need to have some form of mandatory training out there, not the tick box type, you know, that old compliance thing. You do it once a year. Thank God for that. It's finished. Off we go. No, in the moment, regular, but mandatory. And certainly you will have some high-risk staff who just need to be reminded that they're accessing pretty sensitive data. And so what can they do to be aware and make it personal? And then finally, and this is something that I'm asked quite regularly, cyber risk reporting has to be business outcome oriented. Boards, business executives understand revenue, operations, customer impact, legal exposure. That's the way we have to be reporting cyber risk. It's not about how many attacks we repelled. It's not about how good our systems might be. You need to translate it into business language. If you can do that, not only will you get buy-in, but you will also have a much richer conversation about the role that cyber and therefore cybersecurity and cyber resilience play in the business. So I've talked about the overall way in which I think 2026 is going to unfold. I've highlighted four particular challenge areas, and I've talked about some of the questions you can ask to dig into the way in which your organization may be about to address them. I've also talked about the role of the board and also about risk and the way we might manage that. So what does the overall future look like as far as I'm concerned? Well, I think that security is still an evolving space, and this is what makes it so interesting. Anybody considering a shift in career, security is a fantastic place to move to. It's never a dull moment. Yes, it can be stressful, but it also can be fun at the same time. You're also going to have to keep up with rapid technology changes that are going to introduce different ways of working, new associated threats. That's going to keep you on your toes. And I think that the way to deal with that is through collective and collaborative working. Yes, across the enterprise, but also across industry. And we're seeing a lot of that now at the ISF. We've always been a particularly sharing kind of organization at the member level. But I think that that cross-industry piece is really important going forward. Regulation, I think it's something that we're going to have to come to terms with. It is there. It's not going to be standardized. It is an overhead. We just have to suck it up and get on with it is the stance that I've taken and landed on there, I have to say somewhat sadly, but that's the reality. And I think that the way to deal with some of these things is through implementing what I would call adaptive governance and therefore adaptive security. So adaptive governance is all about how you can disseminate some of these challenges and approaches right the way down through the organization. So don't have bottlenecks. Move away from hierarchies. Look at how you could integrate right the way across the business, as is appropriate. Boards, business leaders, I think they're critical. They do have a key role to play. And I think the bottom line is that irrespective of what threats and challenges are out there, security will continue to need to support all elements of technology rollout, including AI. And that's what makes it such a fascinating, vibrant, and interesting space to be working in.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more expert insights and thought-provoking discussions. But in the meantime, if you really enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast. If you're interested in becoming an ISF member or continuing the conversation further, please do get in touch with me at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or indeed get hold of me on LinkedIn. And remember, you can explore all our media and resources at our website, securityforum.org.